This is Eat Out In. Well, during the past few months here at Nightlife, we've been chatting to some of Australia's and the world's leading chefs about how their food businesses have been impacted by COVID. They've also shared with us one of their favourite recipes that you can replicate at home when you want that eat out in restaurant feeling. Maggie Beer told us how she has started an online cooking series of her comfort food favourites. You can find the recipe for her orange bread and butter pudding on our Nightlife website. Frank Kimura refashioned his Movida empire with a complimentary home delivery arm and gave us his delicious recipe for Andalusian spinach and chickpeas. And one of the world's most famous chefs, René Redzepi, explained to us why he's converted his 2 Michelin star restaurant Noma in Copenhagen into a burger joint. His simple roast chicken recipe and tips for getting that perfect, crispy, golden skin is also on our website. Well, tonight I wanted to talk to one of the young guns in the restaurant biz, a chef who opened his very first restaurant a few months before the coronavirus brought the food industry to its knees. Nick Stone selected one of the most competitive food precincts in the world for his first foray as chef owner. The Macleay Street Strip in Potts Point, Sydney, not too long ago had 8 hatted restaurants within a stone's throw of each other. Kylie Kwong's Billy Kwong, Fratelli Paradiso, Yellow House, Monopole, The Rex, Cho Cho San, Apollo, Fratelli Fresh. Very impressive alumni there. So Nick decided to throw his own stone into the ring, so to speak, and opened a Spanish tapas bar with his wife and partner at that they called La Bomba, just off Macleay Street on Chalice Avenue. And then all hell broke loose as the coronavirus swept through. But not only has Nick been weathering the COVID storm, he's decided to open a second bar as well next door. Visionary or foolhardy? Well, let's find out. Nick Stone is with me now. Hello, Nick.
Hi, Indira. How are you going?
Very well. Thanks for joining us at Eat Out In tonight. I wanted to have you on the show because I've actually been a regular customer of yours and saw you go through those COVID times from when you set up the restaurant. So I really wanted to check in and see how you've been coping in the last few months. Well, let's start by going back to that fateful day in March when all the restaurants, the bars and pubs were ordered to close to help contain the spread of the coronavirus. What was that day like for you, Nick?
It was a little bit surreal because we actually were allowed to trade, I think it was until 11 a.m. or 12 p.m. That day. I think it was on a Monday. It was just like we opened business as usual and then it was like we just had to shut early and put everything away, pack everything in storage and, you know, try and regroup and think, well, what are we going to do next, I suppose.
So on that first day, when you had to close, what did you think that you may be stepping away from this restaurant, it may never open again?
To be honest, I had no idea. Because, I mean, I think it, for a lot of other people that I've spoken to in, like, similar positions or just working in the industry, like, it's all been about the unknown, I suppose. So we were just obviously waiting for more news to come on how how we could pivot, change, adapt or not adapt, I suppose. It took probably a week just to like take care of business and sort of like refig out the plan of attack. But yeah, like we were obviously thinking about the real possibility of one short restaurant experience.
Very short. Fortunately, restaurants were permitted to begin selling takeaway and alcohol. So you decided to give that a go in the interim. How did you adapt? How did you sort of reconfigure La Bomba?
I suppose you've got to think about more about like your clientele, I suppose. And we had a lot of corporates, I suppose, or people that would live while working in the city, now working from home in Potts Point. So there was still that avenue to sort of still do like a semi premium offering, you know, as well as like your could be like a simple coffee and a sandwich, but people were coming and taking away cheese and charcuterie, bottles of wine, our oysters that we do there. So there was a real sort of mixed demand, I suppose.
And how did you manage with all the social distancing restrictions?
Look, I think obviously we have the sanitation station set up for people that will come up, and that was always at the front of the store, so they were able to do that kind of thing. And obviously no cash. We were doing suggesting people not use money. If they had a card, to use a card, but if they wanted to use cash, we would just exchange on a money tray. Wear gloves, try not to handle the money where possible. And people were pretty good. If they were lining up and waiting for food or waiting for their order or whatever, they were like, they'd like automatically socially distance outside the venue anyway, without too many issues. So yeah, like we didn't have too many problems in that department. But yeah, it's just, I think it's just, it's a bit of an individual thing, but people kind of, they knew what to do, I suppose.
Just hearing you use that phrase, sanitation center, I mean, that's not a phrase that a chef would sort of,
Sanitation station,
yeah,
yeah.
station, exactly.
Well,
And as I mentioned, you run La Bomba with your wife, Aparna, and you have a small child who you
yes.
both then had to care for when the childcare centres were also ordered to shut down. Now, that must have placed incredible pressure on the family.
Yeah, there were some days where he was running wild around the restaurant while we were there, because both of us had to be at the shop. I mean, I think we had 12 staff in total, and we lost 10 of those 12 staff just because there was just no work. I mean, we kept our barista because obviously our takeaway coffee trade is very strong at our place, and just another junior kitchen assistant. He stayed on to help me out the back preparing the food and just keeping maintaining all that kind of stuff. But yeah, look, it was a juggle. I think, I mean, when you're like a owner operator and you're like pretty and you're 100% hands on, you just make it work. Some days are stressful, like any times, but yeah, there were definitely some challenging days over the last few months, that's for sure.
And it must have been so hard to let go all those staff.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we formed like a pretty good relationship through that sort of like busy summer period. We had some really great staff. Quite a few of them were from overseas, like America, Spain, Italy, and they were pretty keen to go home and quite anxious actually, coming to that point where they were slowing down the flights. But they like a good portion of them, I believe, managed to get home, and back in their like relative countries now, going through their own COVID situation back in their countries. But now that things have started to turn around, we've got a few of our old staff back, which has been fantastic. And obviously, looking at opening that second store, so really start building again that team structure again, which is.
Well, which brings me to this second bar that you're going to be opening next door. Now, people must be saying to you, you are a sucker for punishment. I mean, you know, just surviving through the reopening after COVID, and now you're opening a second venue. What's that about? Why a second bar?
Well, before this had actually sort of transpired, we were literally that week that we got closed down. That's when the construction was due to start on our corner shop there, which is just literally one space away from our existing venue. So we thought, great corner location. The rent was reasonable. Crunched a few numbers, saw this would be a great opportunity for us to offer like a little bit more of a high-end offering. High-end, I mean, yeah, it's to offer something a little bit different, because obviously, I mean, we do eggs and bacon, but then we do oysters and charcuterie at La Bomba at the moment. But we're trying to like shift a bit of that more refined stuff to the corner bar, where there'd be more of a that wine bar feel. But yeah, it just the timing. We thought let's at least apply and see if we can get the lease, and we got the lease. And the rest is history now. We signed it away. We're on our rent-free period, thankfully, at that time. So that saved us a bit of dough in that respect. But look, we're halfway through the renovation now, and maybe in I think another 4, maybe 5 weeks, we're due to open, and touch wood, everything's on track, and hopefully we won't have to, fall back into any restrictions. That's obviously our biggest fear now, is if we fall back into having to have any more like internal restrictions. Like, I know outside you can do like up to 50 people outside with the spacing between the tables, but you still have those limitations inside. So, I mean, that's the only place we can, that's the only challenge we foresee at the moment, I
Yeah,
think.
going through something that Melbourne is going through
Correct.
at the moment. Yeah, because it's very
That's right.
hard to reconfigure, isn't it?
Oh, I feel sorry for those guys. I mean, they were gearing up to, basically open up their doors again to less restrictions, just to have that put on hold for the time being. So, yeah, I really feel for the guys down the road.
Well, Nick, tell us about your early life. You grew up in Tasmania, spent some time there. What was your connection to food like as a youngster?
Good question. Food for me was like a necessity. Like, my parents separated when I was in high school. So
Yeah.
when I got home from school, nobody was there. They were off at work. So I literally just started cooking anything and everything. And then, as you know, Tasmania has some really great produce readily available. So, it just kind of just went from there. And I literally just, I was working in my friend's family restaurant around Asia in West Hobart. Literally starting at the bottom, I would like clean the bathrooms, put away the deliveries, and that would be my job for the day. And then I got involved in some of the cooking. And the restaurant was actually, it was a Malay Indian restaurant. So it was like an interesting place for me to start, but I just got a real appreciation for how delicious you can make food. It's like, I mean, I, grew up from eating pretty standard food growing up, to eating like this stunning Malay Indian food, and it just sort of like triggered something in my mind, and went out, got myself an apprenticeship not too long after I started that job, and yeah, what are we, 20 years later, 23 years later, here I am.
So you've worked at some very impressive restaurants around the country. What was the most influential for you?
Probably about 10 years ago, I think I was working in a, it was a Moorish cuisine restaurant called Alira down in Pyrmont. It's not there anymore, unfortunately, but at its time it was relatively cutting edge, in the sense it was kind of quite a modern impression of Middle Eastern, Moroccan, Northern African, Spanish cuisine. Everything, a lot of, like, it was one of those places where you do 6 hours of six hours of mise en place for 3 hours of service. Was one of those sorts of places. Really just developing like sauces and marinades and all the salsas and all the meat and fish preparation was done almost like daily in that sense. So it was probably my first tough cooking. I mean, it was a small team, but it still had its challenges because of the caliber of and quality of the, and expectations, I suppose, of the food that was coming out of there. That was pretty cool. That was probably like the thing that got me probably into doing Spanish food now, I would say. And maybe probably when I was working out, I worked at Mona recently, down in
In
Tassie.
Tassie.
In Tassie, yeah, work at the Farrow there, which is their new part of the museum there that they opened. I think it was a couple of years ago now. And again, just really dedicated to using local produce there. Like Vinny Trim, the executive chef down there, he one of the hardest working men I've ever met and worked for. Like, he's 50 plus now, but he was setting the pace, for all the young kids complaining about doing too many hours. Like, he was there all day, every day. But it's just, it was a real passion from him, and it really rubbed off on the people around him. And the coolest thing about Mona is cooking on fire. Like, there's fire pits all over the place down there. So, you're forever smoking something in the smoker that they've got there, or on one of the several outdoor fires. You'd be, sealing beef or cooking vegetables, all that kind of stuff. So that was a really unique experience. I was only there for 1 year, but I learnt a lot, and sort of sort of reignited my energy, I suppose, into, doing our own thing. And that's when this opportunity came up here in Potts Point, and Aparna and I packed our bags again, left Tasmania, and moved to Sydney.
You're listening to Indira and I Do on Nightlife, and this is our Eat Out In segment where we talk to a chef about their work, their restaurant, how they're coping with COVID and the lessening of restrictions or the ramping up of restrictions as we're finding. And the chef we're featuring tonight is Nick Stone and his wonderful Spanish restaurant La Bomba. So, Nick, you mentioned that you and your wife Aparna decided then to set up your first restaurant in Potts Point. Now, as I mentioned, it's one of the toughest food precincts, not only in Australia, but even in the world. Why would you do that as a first-time chef owner?
Look, it was a great opportunity. I'm like, we both knew that expectations are pretty high in Potts Point because obviously there's a lot of competition. And it was yeah, when the opportunity came up, we had to at least look into it. It took some time. It was about a 6 month negotiation, really, just trying to figure out all the nuts and bolts and getting all our finances and everything together. But yeah, June last year, we did the exchange, and we've just thought, with obviously just looking at the area, no one was doing that particular type of cuisine. And that's the kind of the good thing I think about Potts Point, actually, is no one's really doing the same thing. There's a lot of diversity from your smaller kind of your Thai restaurants, and then you've got the high flyers like your Apollos and the Fratelli Paradisos and Chocho Sans and all that kind of stuff. So we just thought with our offering, it was we had yeah it was it would do well, and we thought, well, you've just got to go for it sometimes. I mean, you never really know. It's not a guaranteed thing, this business. But yeah, we just put our heads together and just came up with the concept, and yeah, just went for it.
Now, as you said, restaurants are tough in any era, but particularly, obviously, it's been a devastating year dealing with the coronavirus. But particularly, I feel for young people coming into the industry, trying to establish themselves like you are. What do you think the future is for young people in the restaurant and hospitality industry?
Look, I think the dream's still alive, without a doubt. I mean, I would still encourage like the young people that work for us at the moment to pursue a career in the industry, because obviously I think we as a people like to have that opportunity to be able to dine out and socialize and enjoy good quality food and wine. But yeah, look, I think just maybe the dynamics of bigger venues, in my opinion, they'll how because obviously the operating costs for these bigger venues are a lot higher than what we have to deal with. But look, I think over the next maybe 3 to 6 months, you'll probably see some bigger venues maybe look at what they do and other offerings that they do, like even the fine diners that we're doing takeaway. You know what I mean? Maybe they've got to think like, is our food transportable? Like how do we deliver that restaurant great experience to people's doors, and get the packaging right and all that kind of stuff. That'll probably come into play. And it's something that I think everyone got a crash course in. I think, yeah, like what travels well, what doesn't travel well, what do people actually want to take away and eat at home? I know some friends that have got bars over the city, like they're doing some amazing cocktail packages with martini glasses, pre-mixed cocktails in a nice box, where you just go and pick it up and take it home, and you so you can have your restaurant grade cocktails sitting in your UGG boots, in front of your TV.
Sounds really good. Speaking of which, now all the chefs that we have on the show, we ask them to share one of their recipes with us. And you've got your recipe, and this is one of my favorite dishes at your restaurant, your bomba rice.
Yes.
Why this dish, and take us through the recipe.
I suppose because it speaks towards our sort of Spanish Mediterranean vibe that we're going through, and it's a dish that we opened with from the beginning. I mean, it's had some subtle changes along the way, but it's basically, I mean, it's cooked like a risotto, but it's got flavors. It's all got all the flavors of Spain in there. And yeah, it's I think it's really nice because the ingredients, and it's nice and fresh. Just a few little ingredients, and you can have yourself a delicious meal, you know.
Okay, so just quickly, how do our listeners recreate this dish at home?
So it's basically, so you want to make sure you get try and find bomba rice or any type of paella rice, whether it be calaspara, I think is a typical short grain rice that you can use for this dish. But it's simply you've got onions and celery and garlic all chopped up nice and small. You sweat that off in some olive oil in a medium-sized pot. You don't want to have the pan too hot either, just enough to so the vegetables can get a nice little bit of translucency to it. And then you add your rice, and then just toast your rice in the oils and the butters that's in the pan. Once they've gone translucent, and then you can see that the rice is covered with all the oils, you can deglaze with a nice little cup of white wine, a dry white wine preferably. If like you do 2 grams of saffron, sounds like a lot, but it kind of gives it that nice deep color and nice saffron flavor. And for this recipe, you'll use 350 grams of bomba rice, and this should give you around enough rice for three to four serves, I think I've allowed for this recipe. And basically, like cook out the rice as you would, I suppose, like a risotto. You don't want to mix the rice too much though, because you don't want to break those outer layers of the rice too much. You can do all the mixing towards the end of the dish. And basically, once all the stock and the wine's evaporated, basically, and absorbed into the rice, basically, you've got your chopped dill, your chopped chives, your chopped parsley, a little squeeze of lemon juice. Some manchego cheese, creme fraiche. Basically, that all goes in last minute, and that's when you can like whip the rice and get it nice and creamy. The creme fraiche gives it a really nice richness, gives it that really nice creamy kind of, and almost makes it a little bit loose too, so it's not too stodgy. Sometimes you get risottos that are a little bit stodgy, but I find the creme fraiche sort of just loosens down the rice a little bit more. And yeah, just obviously have a taste, good hit of salt and pepper. And we garnish ours with yamba prawns. So we use like a medium to large prawn. We actually at the restaurant we just do one big prawn roasted on top. But you know, you can obviously if you're doing for three or four people, you know, the world is your oyster, so to speak. You could put four or five prawns on there. But you know, roast up the prawns. You don't want to obviously roast them too hard. Try and keep them a little bit translucent around the head, and you get all that lovely head juice out of the prawn as well, which is nice to mix through the rice as well.
Wow, that sounds delicious. So that recipe for your bomba rice, Nick, is on the Nightlife website, along with all our other recipes from the other chefs we've spoken to in our Eat Out In segment. So thank you so much for joining us tonight, Nick.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Nick Stone, chef and owner of La Bomba restaurant in Potts Point, Sydney, joining us for our Eat Out In, about to open his second restaurant, a bar next door. One of the young chefs in the country, doing it really well during very difficult times.
Nightlife with Indira Naidoo on ABC Radio.